Michael Nicholson, Reel 36. This one is recorded on the interviewer's mic and is therefore somewhat hissy, since he is way off mic.
Old as religion itself. Oh, yes, one. Rape camps. Well, you heard about them. And, of course, it's the kind of thing that journalists would go to the end of the earth to try and find if they existed. So, you know, it's not as if you didn't try and find them. The big problem, of course, is that they were in Serb territory. And the Serbs are hardly likely to say, come and visit our rape camps. So nobody ever did find them. I think that was possibly because they never existed. It wasn't until really after the war that the people, women, started to come forward and say yes, they had been in rape camps. And there was supposed to have been one near Pale. But, you know, I think the only evidence that was presented, or the only witnesses that were gathered together, were gathered together by a German feminist group, a very militant feminist group in Germany, who gathered a number of witnesses around who said yes, they had been raped. Now, of course, is there ever a war where soldiers do not rape women? And never. The accusations forever. You would, all wars have those kind of casualties. And there were some pretty horrific stories about women being sex slaves in barracks. Well, again, that is as old as the hills. I mean, rape is as old as war. So no doubt it did exist, and I'd be most surprised if they didn't. Think what the Russians did to the German women when they came into Berlin. But if there'd been rapes in camps, that would have meant an enormous number of women. So my question was always, where are the babies? And soldiers do not put on condoms when they rape. Those kind of women, especially the Muslim women, did not take contraceptive pills. So where were the babies? And there aren't any. There was one baby presented in a German hospital, and it was photographed so many times the doctors had to stop because they said it was blinding the child. So dismissive though I appear to be, I think it was most unlikely. Of course there were rapes, of course it was done on a large scale, of course there was in many Serb mentality that, you know, if you put a Serb seed into a Muslim's egg, you have disgraced that Muslim, and no doubt that kind of mentality existed, of course. But no, I don't believe there was such a systematic raping camp. No, never heard of them, but we never met them, but we heard. There weren't that many. There were lots of scare stories. There were stories that there were Muslim fedayeen, a great army of Muslim fedayeen had been brought in from Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, Iraq, Iran, Muslims who were willing to fight on behalf of other Muslims. We never saw any evidence whatsoever of that. I mean, there were even stories at the time that there were training camps in certain parts of Bosnia. Well, believe me, these are the kind of stories that journalists, they say, would hunt forever for, and many did hunt, but nobody ever found them. We knew of three British mercenaries who would have been willing to fight for, I think it was the Croats, yes, I think they were willing to fight for the Croats. I think they were based somewhere near Banja Luka. There was a pretty horrific story about how they were visited one night and taken out and shot, trussed up and shot. Now, who shot them, you never know. Whether it was Croats deciding they were too dangerous, or whether it was Serbs who were taking their revenge, but they were the only people we knew. Three British Army soldiers who eventually found the trust and shot. Yes, I've said many times that in reports that the dangerous thing about Sarajevo especially, but there was no front line. You know, in many, many wars there is a front line, and you can say, well, this is as far as I'll go. I'm not prepared to risk it any more than this. You know, I think this is as far as we dare go to get our story. Must have the older you get, the less of a risk you're willing to take. And nowadays it's obvious that when I watch news reports that most reporters nowadays are not willing to take any risks whatsoever. Maybe the health and safety executive has forbidden them to do it, I don't know, or the insurance companies. Obviously I think in the old days we took far more risks than we ever do today. But to answer your question, it was difficult to know where what was safe and what wasn't. Say Sniper Alley one day could be very quiet, and the next day five people shot dead. You could be in the marketplace on the Friday and feel perfectly safe, surrounded by the high-rise buildings, and on the Saturday you hear that 70 people have just been killed in the vegetable market. So it was dangerous, and you were never safe with either side. There's always a renegade on. You can go to a roadblock and they'll be perfectly polite, and you hand over your $10-$20 to them and give them a packet of cigarettes and they wave you on your way. You can go to another one and they'll prod an AK into your belly and they'll slap you across the face, and you think, well, is this it? It was a dangerous place, and you could never give advice to anybody. I think some of the younger reporters look to the older reporters for a bit of guidance, but we couldn't give any guidance. I think for most of us it was a new experience. There were, I think there were 60, 80 casualties. I think about 50 deaths. But most of them were among the Bosnians themselves. People going out with troops for local TV, local radio, local newspaper. There weren't that many international deaths. There were a few very sad ones. People, of course, dressed up for war. They put on their flak jackets and their helmets and their masks and everything else. I never wore a flak jacket there. I never wore a helmet. Only once in my life I've ever had a flak jacket, and that was in Vietnam when, you know, I was ordered to do so because if you're a casualty, of course, you're a nuisance. But I could never in a civilian environment defend wearing a flak jacket when everybody else was not. I remember one atrocious occasion watching television here at home when a BBC reporter was in a coach full of children leaving Sarajevo, one of the evacuation coaches. And there they were, four little devils sitting there, just in their frocks and their pullovers, and he had a helmet and a flak jacket on. That, to my mind, is outrageous. So I it's a personal opinion, but I would never wear a flak jacket and helmet when civilians around me cannot. Oh yes, not to begin with. To begin with, we just had cars and vans. I remember on one occasion when we came in from. Belgrade, we drove in from Belgrade. I said there was only two ways to get in, but there was a third way, and that is to come in through the Serb side, through Belgrade. And left it rather late, got to the airfield. We had to cross from the Serb side, across the airfield, and we came to a post guarded by some of the Canadians. It was raining hard, it was getting dark. And they said, no, you can't go across, there's just been an exchange of fire, it's too dangerous. I said, well, it's even more dangerous to go back where we've come from, because, you know, to start driving back into Serb territory at night, you know, it's suicidal, and we've got to go across. And he said, well, on your own head be it. But, you know, he said, go straight across, and as soon as you get to the first junction, you turn left onto the main runway and just head for the tower. So, you know, we were getting a little, we'd been driving all day, you know, 10 hours driving, it was raining, it was dark, we were tired. Excuse me. But anxious to cross the airfield. But so off I drove. I was driving a van, like a Volkswagen van with windows all around, crew in the back. And I tore across, and then overshot the runway, and suddenly realized that we were facing Dobrynja, the suburb of Dobrynja, which was mostly Muslim, but the Serbs were there too. And we were facing houses that had just that, you know, 20 minutes before been firing at the Canadian post. And I thought, this is it. And there were these houses. And of course, the windscreen wipers gave backwards and forwards. I can't see a damn thing yet. And the crew are now crouching behind me on the floor of the van. And I thought, well, this is it. And I did a slow 3-point turn, waiting for the machine gun or the sniper or whatever to hit us. And nothing happened. And I drove off. And when we got to the control tower, the guys were saying, wow, you madman. To this day, I don't know why. I really don't. Anyway, that was as close as we got, I think, on that occasion. Martin Bell had a close encounter. He got shot at, and the bullet went through the door under his foot and hit the gearbox casing. And the other second bullet came through the window and hit the driving mirror. So he was pretty shaken up, as shaken as I've ever seen Martin. He's a pretty cool character, but he got through half a bottle of my whiskey that night. And poor old Maggie Moth, of course, she was an Australian camerawoman for CNN, and she was hit by a sniper, took her bottom jaw away, took out her tongue. They slowly reconstructed it. She went to the Mayo Clinic in America. She was a very lucky girl because she's a woman cameraman and been in Sarajevo a long time with Christiana Amanpour of CNN, two very, very brave women, very brave indeed. Christiana was the only American correspondent in Sarajevo to stay more than a few hours. I mean, she virtually lived there when all the other American correspondents came in for an hour and went out again. Oh yes, there were no resident American correspondents, TV correspondents in Sarajevo. They'd make a great hoo-ha, and Don Rather and Sam Donaldson and Rocco would come in, do a quick piece to camera in Sarajevo, and then get out again as quickly as they could. But Christiana stayed there, and Maggie Moth was her cameraman. But because of that, some magazine, I think an Italian magazine, had done a feature on Maggie, taken photographs of her and so on. And when the surgeons were rebuilding her face, they used those photographs to rebuild it. But the dear old girl, she's still in the business. But there were casualties. John Schofield was killed. a French cameraman was killed. A French reporter was killed. But, you know, people are killed in war. Not surprising. There was no way of not being killed, really. I mean, there's obviously no front line. Well, women are the exception, and that's why they become so famous so quickly. To see old grunts like me doing the old dodging bullet, but, you know, it's nothing new. But to see a pretty face out in the front line and flat jacket and helmet is a bit of a novelty, and, you know, people love it. I mean, old crouch like Kate Adie, as she described herself. I mean, Kate's been doing it for a long time, and does it exceptionally well. But I think there was, I mean, I was watching some of the coverage out of Afghanistan, and, you know, some of the, what we call the bimbos, the pretty little faces and big busts, looked terribly attractive, you know, very seductive in their flak jackets and army gear. I can see why TV has now cottoned onto them. that, well, I mean, actually, this sounds too much like an old Colonel Blimp, should I? If they earn their medals, then, you know, good for them. Good luck to them. Well, Claire is from the old school. I mean, the most famous of all, of course, Martha Gellhorn. But Claire, I mean, she was just a little old trooper. She was always up the front line. But she was never derring do, you know. There would never be "I missed death by 10 yards" headline in a copy. She would just do her job. I remember once in Pakistan, during the Indo-Pakistan War, I'd been trying to get some film on. I left it with a pilot friend at the Pakistan Air Force headquarters in a suitcase. And the next morning, the headquarters had been bombed, destroyed, so I went back to try and find the suitcase in which my film was. And thank God I found it. And I also found Claire was there searching through the rubble. And I assume she was searching, you know, for her copy or for evidence or for whatever. But she told me later she thought she'd go there because there might be a few bottles of whiskey from the mess still surviving. She is a fantastic trooper. Fantastic woman. But television, I mean, the fact you've got pretty little bimbos in Afghanistan is an indication how the television has changed. It's very much cinema now, isn't it? And you know, it's got to be. It's Hollywood. There's bound to be a Hollywood movie soon about an American woman war reporter. I sound terribly. Well, what we could do, well, let's see how it goes, because I have to start getting to Grandma's lunch fairly soon.